leadership is human. It's not as far off as people's minds feel, right? It's not like a concept far away. It's something that human beings can build. And if there are problems, human beings can actually solve them. And I think if we actually find ways to connect people with leadership, people with governments, it's nationally, internationally, I think we'll be able to find a lot more solutions.
Welcome to Voices of Open Government, a show from the Open Government Partnership, where we explore how to make our democracies more transparent, inclusive, participatory, and accountable. In this season, we're exploring some of the big issues facing democracy by talking to the reformers, activists, journalists, and citizens who are on the ground right now in the middle of the fight. I'm your host, Toza Perez. Let's get started. Young people have become increasingly influential in the government space, pushing campaigns and leveraging powerful tools such as social media. Ebenezer Wikina has spent his life advocating for positive change. Besides being a founding member of the OGP Youth Collective, Ebenezer works as a campaign strategist at the Change.org Foundation. In his role, he's reaching over 3 million users in Nigeria to build social movements. He's also the founder of Policy Shapers, a youth-led policy advocacy community that leverages technology to drive policy development in Africa. Today, Ebenezer tells us how he has managed to engage young people in civic and government issues that affect their everyday lives.
So I'm based in a southern city in Nigeria called Port Harcourt, known for its ports and rivers. I think I've always loved to write growing up as a child. I found myself studying journalism, first before venturing into development. I spent like the early years of my life mostly with my grandmother. So like my grandma would just come take me out of my parents' house and I'll stay with her for the holidays and, some of my school time. And I think that's one of the things that she instilled in me early enough was the culture of watching the news. So like I used to be so upset then because like there'll be cartoons, there'll be like wacky races or something on. And once it's 9 o'clock, she just comes into the living room, shuts everything down and changes it to the news channel, gives me a notepad, to take notes and explain the news to her at the end, So I think that all of that, that culture and habits of being aware and informed even helped me in school because like I then picked up like a habit of reading, learning new words, increasing my vocabulary and stuff like that.
Ebenezer became an outstanding student as well as an advocate at the early age of 19.
I did a campaign on examination malpractice. I actually started a Facebook page called Read Not Runs. So read as in read, not, and then R-U-N-S. So in Nigeria at the time, runs was like a slang for like exam malpractice. So people who will be able to like take like their textbooks into class to, use it for exams and everything. So they called it runs then. So, and it was popular at the time and it seemed like the right thing to do. And I just felt like we needed a mindset shift. I didn't think of it so deeply then. I just, for me at the time, I just felt it was unfair for someone who had read and studied so hard to go through the exam and struggle to pass. And then someone else just comes with their textbook and just copies everything and gets an A, right? So I just thought it was unfair then. And I tried to get other young people interested in that same thing. I think we started a petition then even. funny enough, we got some people to sign, had a physical thing where we had like placards, went to a couple of schools with a couple of friends to tell them about exam malpractice and stuff like that. We did quite a lot of like writing articles and trying to convince people, writing like op-eds and stuff. So I think writing had been consistent, in most of the work that I do.
Ebenezer's passion for writing led him to create an interview series called The Stroll. In 2013, he began speaking with diplomats from around the world.
I interviewed almost anybody, like from Malala Yousafzai, to Amina Mohammed, the current deputy UN Secretary General. I was 22 then, right? So just being confident to reach out to people and the fact that they will respond, over 120, I think by the time I stopped, gave me that confidence, you know, to keep pushing. One of the most liking girls really impactful to me was the interview I did at the UN in Geneva. So I got a chance to interview the Director General of the UN office in Geneva. So in 2016, as one of the leaders of the World Economic Forum Global Shapers Community, we got a chance to go for like a boot camp, like a leadership boot camp in Switzerland. So while I was there, I took the chance. I mean, I'm always the one that's looking for like, if I have this opportunity, can I do something else with it? So I was just looking for the next thing to do while I was there, you know, for those 5 or 6 days. So I wrote to him. I said, I'm in Geneva. You know, I'm sure you don't know who I am, but I'd love to interview you. And it took a couple of, you know, days. And then he got back and said, okay, sure, he'd love to speak. And I mean, at the time I was obsessed with like just like development and international relations and everything. I think it was just because of how he was human, you know, how post interview we had a conversation about how he got to that point and how he just seemed like a regular guy, right? He just seemed like someone who just grew, put in the hard work, continued to learn, you know, and he always just kept telling me that if I put in the hard work anywhere I want to be in life, I'll definitely be there, you know, if you continue to work hard, you continue to push yourself and everything. So yeah, so I think that was also really, really inspiring.
After spending over a decade working as a journalist, Ebenezer began organizing TEDx conferences. He also joined the Global Shapers Community, a network of young people born out of the World Economic Forum.
I think one thing that's really driven me as a person has pretty much been about trying to make a change in my community. I come from a place in Nigeria where, I mean, we're kind of like famous for youth restiveness. So there's usually like violence and crime following regions with really huge deposits of oil. But I think when I started out trying to do like things like TEDx or the World Economic Forum Global Shapers Hub here in Port Harcourt, the goal was just to like, you know, give the city and the region a different face, a different look, and inspire other young people to see that they can do something differently.
In 2015, Ebenezer noticed issues with the blood donation process in Nigeria.
The National Assembly, that's like the parliament here in Nigeria, we engaged them to see how we can create legislation around blood. So before 2015, Nigeria didn't really have an organized volunteer blood system where people like go to donate blood. So instead, what happens is that if someone is sick and needs blood urgently, the family members are made to pay like exorbitant rates because, of course, you don't want your family member to die. And then some folks come in, donate blood quickly, and then, you know, they sell the blood. But like, we just felt like blood is a life-giving fluid that really shouldn't be sold. And other parts of the world really have like a voluntary system. You know, things are more organized. And there's even like legislation against it, protecting blood donors and everything. So we just thought, why can't we create something similar in this country?
Ebenezer and others from the Global Shapers community started a change.org petition to address this issue. Together, they managed to create a volunteer blood donation system and push legislation in Nigeria. Ebenezer quickly moved on to address another important issue in the country, air pollution.
We have large amounts of air pollution because when we drill oil in Nigeria, we don't convert to gasoline and then use the gas. So they flare the gas. We take the crude oil and just flare the gas. And the gas has been flared for 50 years plus since oil exploration began in Nigeria. So what you have now is that you've had small black particles everywhere. So if you go out wearing white, you know, after a few hours, you begin to notice like dust particles on you, the black, your painting on your house, you know, begins to look gray at some point and everything. So people were inhaling this thing for a very long time. And we started to engage the state government because we thought that this was better to start from a state level and then go higher because it affected more people in the South. So we started to engage the state government. It took them a long time to act, but we continued to push and put pressure on them. Young people were part of it. We got people like CNN and BBC involved to also put some international pressure as well. And also got the national government as well to also be interested. The Ministry of Environment at the time, Amina Mohammed, who's currently the Deputy UN Secretary General, was our Minister of Environment. So she also got involved as well. So we got all of that happening. And, you know, just the push, long the short story is that it's a long process. Usually change is a very long, sometimes annoying process because it feels like nobody's listening to you. But the short story is that we were eventually able to get the United Nations Environment from Kenya, the Africa division, to get interested in the issue. And then they came down, met the Rivers State government, and they did like research, a formal research, to understand what causes the soot pollution and give like recommendations to the state government on how they can implement it. So far, they've implemented most of it. So the soot has reduced largely. It's not fully gone, but it's not as bad as it used to be.
Bringing together his experience shaping government, Ebenezer founded Policy Shapers in 2020. Policy Shapers is a community of young people that leverages technology to drive policy development in Africa. Such an initiative is especially important in Nigeria, where about 62% of the population is under 25 years old.
It was one of the COVID projects. And, you know, my team members and I started that because we noticed that there was really low youth engagement in policy, in governance. We have like a lot of Gen Zs and, you know, so many young people who have so much energy, have access to technology, but are not really engaged with government. We're having our elections this year. Many of them don't really care about voting. So we started Policy Shapers to see how we can increase that interest. Most people feel disconnected from leadership generally. And I think the interview experience, even my years in church, and others helped me to see that leadership is human. You know, I'm not sure why I'm stressing on this human thing, but I just think it's not as far off as people's minds feel, right? It's not like a concept far away. It's something that human beings can build. And if there are problems, human beings can actually solve them. And I think if we actually find ways to connect people with leadership, people with governments, it's nationally, internationally, I think we'll be able to find a lot more solutions.
Throughout his career, Ebenezer has tried to convince young people to care about the government.
I think the most convincing argument is that it's our future. So the policies, the decisions that people in government make ultimately affects our future more. I mean, most of the people in government will have lived for 40, 50 years, maybe have 20, 30 years more to live. But you're 19, you're 20, it means you do have a longer way to go. So whether it's on an issue on climate change or the economy, on finance, or even like women's rights, so why not just see how you can be part of it? Why not see why you should care about what they say? Why not vote? Why not register to vote? Do you understand? So just knowing that it impacts your future and impacts your life, I think is one of the strongest arguments that anyone can make.
The most recent campaign led by Policy Shapers is Reform IELTS. The IELTS is a requirement for people who wish to relocate to the UK for work or study opportunities. Some English-speaking countries are exempt from taking this test, but not Nigeria.
We noticed that the UK government has a list of countries that it recognizes as English-speaking countries, and there were none of like the UK's former colonies in Africa on that list, none of them from Asia on that list. So what happens is, if I want to study in the UK, I have to write an English proficiency test that costs over $250. And the results for the test expires every 2 years. So if I write that proficiency test to start the bachelor's program in the UK or Canada, for example, before my bachelor's program is over, my results have expired. So if I want to do like a master's program, I have to rewrite that test, you know, and billions are made annually from the test. And we just thought, being a former British colony, we just think it didn't make any sense, right? And we had to engage.
In 2021, the hashtag Reform IELTS campaign went viral, gathering over 80,000 signatures.
We also engaged our Ministry of Foreign Affairs, engaged quite a number of government institutions everywhere, pretty much, just to question on the issue. The good story is that currently 20 universities across Canada and the US have done policy changes, ensuring that young people from Africa, who, especially English-speaking countries, who seek to study, whether it's graduate programs or undergraduate programs, are able to do so without having to write the test. We've also gotten successes from two universities in the UK from our campaign. So we started to write to them individually, hundreds and hundreds of them across Australia and Canada, and we're beginning to see some change happening.
Just like with this campaign, Ebenezer likes to leverage social media in his advocacy.
One of the things that we've been working on had been to explain the news using memes, so things people would easily understand, ensuring that we're jumping on trends, whether it's a new TikTok dance, to explain, you know, a campaign. So we've explored all of these things, and I think that what we've learned is that, especially in Nigeria, young people use different platforms for different things. And so we've been able to like drive more conversation on Twitter because people are, you know, chitty chatty there, want to talk, are willing to engage and write long threads and everything. But what we found on Instagram and like TikTok is that, you know, you should keep it a bit light. So we find ways to talk about serious issues in a not so serious way, but we find a way to get them interested with funny things like memes and funny videos and even like skits. So we have a lot of young people who are making skits, like comedy skits. And so getting them involved as well has been one of the things as like our influencers and ambassadors, you know, using them to pass the message across. So we've been able to do that a lot through social media in different ways. I think it's just about understanding how the different platforms work and being able to use that. But I think in Nigeria, Twitter is like one of the best and fastest places to start something, you know, to start a movement, to start a conversation, to get people thinking, get people talking.
Ebenezer believes connecting policy advocacy to everyday issues leads to civic engagement.
I think the advice is to break it down and contextualize it in the sense that people can see that it connects to them. Most people wouldn't get involved with a campaign when they feel it doesn't connect to them, right? So I think just bringing that context to it, ensuring that they understand how this connects to them, they will be fired up. So even like for the Reform IELTS campaign, for a very long time, before we started the change.org petition and started to use social media, for a very long time, we wrote to the Home Office, we're not getting response and everything. But once we started to show people how we connected to them, showed them how much they were spending, how much the country was spending every year, showed them, you know, what that was versus other countries that are not writing the test and everything, you know, people just said to say that, oh, this actually really connects to me. It's not just some fancy campaign. And I think also ensuring that there's, so like the leadership of the campaign was loosely managed. So it wasn't really, I mean, I had the idea and everything, but it was so open that almost anyone was talking on TV about it, on radio. People felt like they owned it. If they feel like they own the campaign, then they will push it as far as they want to go. But if it feels like the campaign is by a particular group pushing it to some certain people, then I think that people wouldn't feel as much involved as you want them to feel.
Ebenezer also believes that democracy conferences should focus more on concrete actions and less on ideals.
I feel like most of our international gatherings have a lot of conversation, but very little like follow-up action. So I would love for conversations to focus on, okay, what's the progress made so far? What do we have to do? And how much time do we have to follow up with it? You know, so sort of like, I don't know if I call it like an action plan, like an M&E plan of some sort. You know, I love for this kind of conversations to happen where they're more measured, because I think we speak more like in the ideal sense. So much more than a more realistic thing of, okay, this is the situation on ground and this is what we have to solve.
Ebenezer's passion for social change is what led him to attend the Open Government Partnership Summit in Georgia in 2018.
So I was one of those people who joined to attend, but because I also had like media skills, I was also there for like support, like capture the moments, did a documentary of young people there, you know, the events that we did like a podcast interview as well at the event. So that was the first time I learned about OGP and the entire OGP process.
We asked Ebenezer to tell us how he thinks OGP is doing when it comes to involving young people.
I think that if you look globally, I think that the OGP is even a lot more forward thinking. Because what happens is that you have a conversation about young people and you don't have young people as part of the conversation. Then you have like the small pocket side events for young people to just like discuss among themselves and maybe stand outside and hold placards, you know, without like much inclusion. So I think that's more like performative inclusion because like they're not part of the process of decision making. But I think that the OGP is doing really great, going from just where we have side events to where you have young people on the CSO steering committee or young people making decisions around or contributing decisions around who hosts the next conference or being part of like major decision making forums. I think that that's where we should work towards being. And I think it's a process. And I think that's a learning process that we're currently in.
Ebenezer is also one of the beneficiaries of the Accountability Lab Incubator. It aims to encourage young people to find tech solutions to governance issues.
And I think what Accountability Lab does generally is to help people get closer to governments. find ways where they could hold government accountable, find ways where they could hold corruption accountable, especially like around corruption, and even like finding ways to turn public leaders into anti-corruption advocates and champions. So they have things like Integrity Idol, just like your American Idol, but Integrity Idol helps to create and celebrate those who are doing great. Because one of the challenges is that we shout about corruption, but when there are those who are doing really, really great work, nobody really like celebrates them. Just like, oh yeah, you're doing what you're supposed to do. And then but we go on and complain about corruption. So I think like they're trying to like, you know, support people who are doing great and shine the light on them as a way to encourage others to also want to do great work. So they do that through Integrity Idol.
Ebenezer believes Nigeria is at a critical moment when it comes to civic participation.
I think that in Nigeria, we're approaching one of the most important elections in our history, because for the first time in a very long time, Nigeria has usually had very high voter apathy, people not really caring about the elections. I mean, a good example is that in 2019, in our previous presidential elections, we had only about 35% turnout, which was really low. That's not even up to half of people who registered, you know, who actually came out to vote. We also had really low registration among young people. But this year, registrations have gone really high. The percentage of young people who registered are about 70%. So that's a huge, like, you have so many new voters, people who really want to get involved. And most people have said that this had come from so many reasons. In 2020, there was a campaign called End SARS, which was like an anti-police brutality campaign in Nigeria, which was led by young people, feminists, young women, young men, you know, people who got involved and tried to ask for the government to disband that arm of the police. It's called SARS, the Special Anti-Robbery Squad. And sadly, the campaign went off in the sense that the government, you know, clamped down on protesters. You know, there was shooting at the particular toll gates. The government continues to say that they didn't shoot, but, you know, there's video evidence of all of that. And I think all of that just got people really upset about the government and about how people are treated and how, you know, democracy has been run in Nigeria for a long time. And I think that's what led to this high rise in registrations. People are asking, you know, representatives to come out for debates. People are ready to debate you on social media, you know, and I think that that's like a general awakening. So I think that the ultimate barometer will be for the elections to come and for us to see how far that goes. But I think that from what we've seen so far, I think that our democracy is going to be really strong post-elections, because you have a situation where it's not just going to be about the four-year voting cycle, but people will be able to engage on a day-to-day thing, which I think is what democracy should really be about. Voting is great, but like what happens on the day-to-day, the budgets, the allocations, and everything that people do daily, I think that should be the primary focus. So in Nigeria, I'll say we are getting there. You know, it's not a strong democracy yet, and it's also not very weak, but I think that from medium where we are, I think we're going to become stronger.
Given all he has achieved so far, we were curious to hear what Ebenezer looks forward to.
Currently at the moment, I think that Nigeria is at, like I said earlier, not just because we have an elections coming, but I think that we're at a tipping point sort of in the social movement calendar. And I think that just the work I do currently at Change.org, helping more citizens to become active and to even think, whether it's through by signing petitions or sharing petitions, getting them to even just think about solving problems, I think that that's a very, very key thing. I think it keeps me really passionate. I also think that the work we're trying to do with policy shapers by getting young people in particular interested in governments, whether it's even just knowing the names of the governors across the country or writing policy memos and helping them edit them and everything and getting them involved in debates. I think that all of those things are cool currently. I think that that's what keeps me going. The long-term plan for me is that at some point in my life, I believe that I would really want to get into politics. So I actually do see myself maybe running for office at some point in my life. Maybe some local position, maybe nothing national. I mean, I've always been serving. Service has been the center of all my life. So I think that at some point I really do want to do that to the more grander scale. But for now, I think it's just ensuring that I'm going to do what I do, helping people to hold governments accountable, bringing them closer to governments, and even trying to get them interested in the day-to-day issues that they face.
Ebenezer's trajectory shows that young people do have the power to influence government, despite the roadblocks and the difficult challenges they might encounter. Today's conversation also reminded me of how important it is to contextualize advocacy and remind people of how governance affects their everyday lives. I hope you were as inspired by Ebenezer as I was. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review our show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. For the latest updates on open government, you can follow OGP on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Before we go, we'd like to thank OGP and our producers at Human Group Media for making this podcast possible. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you can join us for our next episode.